You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
It's time for Make the Call, a weekly discussion on the top Wisconsin sports stories of the week. You can listen to the show anytime on the free Civic Media app. Download it now on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. Now, it's time for Make the Call, a Civic Media sports production.
It's a special Thanksgiving edition of Make the Call. Welcome in and good morning. I'm Jimmy Cuska. Today's show, a solo venture, and there's a lot to get to. We'll talk about Division III football playoffs. We'll talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, and we'll talk about the Green Bay Packers in just a bit. As we all know, today is the battle for Paul Bunyan's axe, one of the coolest looking trophies in all of college sports and one of the best rivalries, too, for that matter. Wisconsin, Minnesota, they get it done today, this afternoon in Minnesota at TCF Bank Stadium. And I am joined by Jake Kokorowski of BadgerObserver.com. Jake, I have been to a number of these. I was on hand for the very famous punt block game in the Metrodome way back when I was much younger, sitting up in the literal rat's nest of the upper bowels of the Metrodome, where there were actual rats like crawling around. So I can say that about the Metrodome because it was not a great venue. But this game has a special place, I think, for a lot of Badgers fans and a lot of people who just follow sports in general, not only because they're playing for a giant piece of wood cutting technology, but also just the fact that these two schools have been playing each other in football for well over a century. Jake, how exciting is it just, you know, first of all, to be able to cover a game like this, but also just the fact that this rivalry, especially the cap off the year, what a special place to be.
It really is. And, you know, and it's perfect rivalry week. You know, I listened to a podcast called Split Zone Duo, some former SB Nation, colleagues. And you know, this entire week, I'm listening to their preview and it's rivalry week. It's Michigan, Ohio State. It's Mississippi or Ole Miss versus Mississippi State, which that's a very intriguing one because of Lane Kiffin and his future decisions that should be forthcoming upon his where he'll coach next year. And so there's so much, but there's like, it goes back to like the oldest rivalry. It's Wisconsin, it's Minnesota, these two teams. And it's really interesting. You know, I think Joe Brenner said it best where like, hey, there's healthy respect. Doesn't mean you like them. And that was a big thing for Wisconsin. Yeah. You can respect them. And they, you know, and I think in this day and age too, in college football where, yeah, it's a lot of floating players, right? So maybe the rivalries, you know, I think they still obviously mean so much in Wisconsin, Minnesota. I mean, you can tell talking to Darrell Peterson or Joe Brunner just what it means, especially for them being at Wisconsin their entire careers. But so it still matters to those guys that, you know, to the programs with these rivalries. But it's also, you know, to me, it's, you know, this game takes on significance where, I mean, let's be honest, Minnesota has already clinched a bowl eligibility. Wisconsin could get, depending upon APR, where if there's not as many bowl eligible teams, that they could get to 5-7 and then be considered for a bowl if there's not enough bowl eligible teams or if teams drop out. That could be scenarios. It's kind of far-fetched. But we'll see just how it looks come Saturday night. But for really, it's just this is a there's a lot of power and there's a lot of fond lore within this rivalry. And you talked about, you know, I mean, there's the 2005 punt block game, and the come from behind win there. It's even I was there at 2019, Jonathan Taylor's last regular season game, where they just destroyed. They went on a tear those final four games of the year and they clinched the Big Ten West and they almost pull off the upset against Ohio State. That doesn't happen if they don't beat the brakes off of Minnesota on the road. I believe College Game Day was there. And so you have all that stuff, you know, and you could even talk to, like, I talked to walk-on Grover Borderlotti from Whitefish Bay. You know, this is he's in the twilight of his career. He's at the twilight of his career where, you know, this is his final regular season game. He's a redshirt senior graduate. And he wants nothing more than to win Day X. So yeah, it still means something in this day and age, in this current evolution, this current era of college football.
I want to come back to the bowl discussion maybe here in just a minute, but I want to stick with the game here for this next follow-up question to that. We just saw, you know, senior night, we saw some really inspired performances from the Badgers upperclassmen in leading the way in the win last week. You know,
Being that this is their final, I guess I should say, guaranteed game to be out there, how much are we expecting just some of these upper class? We've talked so much about the freshmen this year, but like these seniors have played really well down the stretch.
They really have. Ben Breton's the first guy that comes up. I know I should probably mention Daryl Peterson, or DP, if you will, as everyone knows him as, because he won Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week, 3 sacks, 6 tackles. He had a couple of pass breakups credited to him, along with a forced fumble. So Daryl Peterson probably should be the first one to mention. But I mentioned Ben Barton first just because I think his Peterson was a 4-star recruit. Ben Barton was a 3-star recruit as an offensive lineman out of Stratford and an in-state player. Came back for his 6th year for this year, but even before that, he transitioned from offensive line to defensive line after like a year at, I think it was about a year or a season with Wisconsin, and it took him time to develop. And now you're seeing him like be the nose guard, nose tackle, the interior defensive lineman who's wrecking havoc and allowing Peterson and others to make plays. You have those guys. You have Mason Reiger, who is a transfer from Louisville, but probably comeback player of the year with just what he's done as an older player, as and just consistently providing pressure and keeping opposing quarterbacks off balance. But then you also have guys on offense where Vinny Anthony, where I feel bad, and I mean I'm objective, but this is a player that I think definitely thought he would have a bigger impact on the offense, and obviously it's not his fault in my view with the challenges of offensive line and quarterback and the injuries there and the ineffective play. But Vinny Anthony scored a touchdown end around, the first touchdown of the game against Illinois. That was a big one too. And he's now run for a touchdown. I believe he's caught a touchdown this year. He's also had a kickoff return for a touchdown this year. So there are, for all the youth movement, for all the Cooper Catalanos, the Mason Posas, the Nick Claytons, who's an outside linebacker, should be playing more, Eugene Hilton Jr., or of course, quarterback Carter Smith. You have those older guys that are also leading the way, that they're a major reason why Wisconsin's 2-1 and has, in my opinion, a very good chance of going 3-1 to close out the regular season.
I'm talking to Jay Kokorowski of BadgerObserver.com. You can find his work there. It's a Substack. You can find breakdowns not only on football, but basketball, volleyball, pretty much anything you can expect Badgers-wise. Jake has been covering the Badgers for a number of years, and you get some really great insight with the way he's been covering not only what happens on the court, field, pitch, whatever's happening, but also in recruiting as well. I want to just get one more thought here in on the matchup, just specifically with Wisconsin and Minnesota. Just looking at the game itself, just X's and O's, position to position, what are we looking forward to in this game?
This is going to be a game won in the trenches. And I feel like that's always the case in college football. It's very redundant coach speak, but I think this really applies to what's happening coming up, just with the 2:30 kickoff. It's big. Minnesota leads the Big Ten in sacks. Anthony Smith's is, and we've seen Wisconsin offensive line be better, after solidifying. They're still allowing some pressures, but they have to watch out with this Minnesota front, who, generating, like I said, 34 sacks on the year. It's first in the Big Ten. But then on the flip side, Wisconsin, they have, another 5 sacks against Illinois, and that's against a mobile quarterback. I think that's probably the most impressive part of what Wisconsin's done in the past few weeks is the pressure they've put on mobile quarterbacks like Fernando Mendoza. He beats you with his arm a lot, but he can run. Damond Williams Jr. from Washington got some runs off of Wisconsin, but they also sacked him, several times or a few times. And so, Drake Lindsey for Minnesota isn't necessarily the most mobile of quarterbacks compared to that. So, can Minnesota's offensive line, and they've done a relatively good job this year, but can they get on him? And can they force him to create, opportunities for turnovers and for Wisconsin, forcing Minnesota into sudden change opportunities for its defense where they may not be as prepared. So I think that's the major X's and O's, is who's going to get more pressure on the young on their on the opponent's younger quarterbacks, and then who can capitalize on that, where it's turnovers, whether it's obviously weird plays, because we know how this goes too, right? Jimmy, you and I have watched this rivalry since we were kids. This is a game too where special teams is going to play a huge part. So is there a punk punt block that could happen? Is there a blocked field goal? Can someone return? And Coy Parrish, who Wisconsin recruited, is Minnesota's top defender outside of Anthony Smith. He's a safety, but he also has a great kickoff and punt returner. He can change the trajectory and the momentum of the game with a kickoff. And luckily for Wisconsin, Nathaniel Vaikos has done a really good job getting touchbacks, and that's going to need to be continued in such a conditions, probably cold conditions, as we with this snowstorm that's bellowing coming forth.
I'm just looking out the window right now. I got a college football game I got to get to here after this is the show is done. I'm watching the snow fall. I know it's not as bad up where you're at in Minnesota, but here in southern Wisconsin, it's coming down quite a bit. We only have a couple of minutes here left, Jake. I do want to ask about the path to bowl eligibility for the Badgers. This is something that I'm aware, obviously, I follow sports, but like, if you're 5-7, there's still a path to get to a bowl game. Can you just explain what that entails for Wisconsin?
Yeah, I don't have the exact math, and I know others earlier this week have kind of put forth at least thoughts that seem accurate. I don't know if it's entirely correct because you don't know, especially with play teams going bowl eligibility that are moving from FCS to FBS up a level that could affect their eligibility. But Wisconsin, usually you have to get six wins to be considered for a bowl, right? And there's some certain rules about even around surrounding that. What happens if Wisconsin beats Minnesota? They have to beat Minnesota first. They'd be 5-7. You're going to need a lot of teams that are on that same bubble of being 4-7 right now to lose. And so there's a long trajectory of teams right now. And then if they somehow Wisconsin, like that, everything falls into place, then they'd have to go and depending upon how many bowl eligible teams there are, they go like how they figure out who would possibly get an invite to a bowl is looking at their APR score. So academics play a huge role still within college football and college athletics. Then, depending on that, I mean, that's one aspect. So if they don't have enough bowl eligible teams, those with the highest APR scores would then be invited to a bowl. The other option is if a team, let's say, that is decimated by injuries, or you're seeing a bunch of players leave via transfer portal, even though the transfer portal's now pushed back into January, you can still see players probably to, you know, you can you might you, I'm guessing in December you're going to see players preemptively announcing their departures. Well, maybe that allows Wisconsin to get into. So that's long. I know it's too long, didn't read, but basically win it versus Minnesota, see what else happens, pray for all the better teams to beat the teams that aren't good, so that they don't win to get bowl eligibility, and then go from there.
There we go. That's a great way to look at it for this week. It is Minnesota, Wisconsin. That comes your way later today at 2:30, with coverage at 12:30 on many of these same civic media stations around the sports network. Jake, we didn't even have a lot of time to dive into recruiting. I know there was a big announcement earlier this week with them picking up a four-star lineman. We got about 30 seconds here, so just give us just a brief overview of what that means for Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's huge. Wisconsin lost two of its offensive line commits in the 2026 class a couple of weeks ago, or it was actually last week. Ben Novak, Maddox Cochran, both departed the class. Just with Brady Beckenhuis, is I both went over that name pronunciation. Four-star kid out of Massachusetts, Boston College commit. Honestly, good pickup. Could be projected to play tackle. He's about 6'6". He's a wrestler. I think he's a good pickup for Wisconsin, especially towards the end of the class.
All right, Jake, thankful for you this week here in the post-Thanksgiving blues with the snowstorm raging here in southern Wisconsin. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to talking to you again here next week.
Yeah, really thankful for you, my friend. Take care. Safe travels, everybody. Be safe. We'll talk to you next week.
Jake Kokorowski of BadgerObserver.com. Coming up next, let's recap the Packers. They played twice this week. That's next on Make the Call.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
It is a Thanksgiving week edition of Make the Call. I'm Jimmy Cuska. Well, the Packers got two wins this week, including a win over the Vikings Sunday, and then, of course, by beating the Lions on Thanksgiving. And let's talk about that win, which Coach Matt LaFleur described as great.
To come in here against a really quality opponent, I mean, they got great players, great coaches. I've got so much respect for what they've been able to accomplish the last few years. And you know it's going to be a battle every time you come in here. But I was really proud of our players. This was a playoff-type atmosphere. And to be able to come in and win on the road is big for us.
Quarterback Jordan Love, who threw 4 touchdowns on Thursday, said the difference in this game was through the air.
Today was a game where we were going to have to pass it. You know, we're going to have to win a game in the air. You know, they're a team that's going to load the box and try and take away that run, and they do a good job at it. You know, I think run game, there's some good stuff there, but going against that style of defense, you got to win sometimes with the pass. That's what we did.
Edge rusher Micah Parsons helped lead a Packers defensive effort that got after Lions quarterback Jared Goff. Micah Parsons saying that this win means a lot.
It's a huge one. This was the division champs last year, so you know who they have on their team. You know what they bring. This is a team that fights to the end. It's a battle. Like, we're all banged up. That was a 12-round boxing match. Ali, like, that's what it feels like. So, you know, this is a team we don't write off. We probably see them again. So this was a big win for where we want to go, win the division, playoffs. That was a playoff game. So we just have to stack these up.
Parsons' teammates are thankful this Thanksgiving week for having Parsons as part of the team. Here's Edrin Cooper.
Very, very. He's an animal down there. So, you know, everybody do their job covering, you know, go give them time to get to the quarterback.
Speaking of Lions quarterback Jared Goff, he said that the Lions were able to move the ball a bit defensively, but the Packers did make big plays when they needed to.
Pretty good, yeah. I thought there was good moments offensively. Moved the ball pretty well at times. Obviously wasn't enough, and come up short that way. It sucks. It hurts. You know, you wish you had, you know, another chance to kind of try to get another one. But, yeah, man, it hurts. It sucks. And they played well. You tip your cap.
The biggest moment on Thursday was a 4th-down conversion to seal the victory. On 4th-and-3, the Packers elected to go for it, and Jordan Love, falling backwards, managed to find Dontavian Wicks for a 1st-down that clinched the Packers' victory in Detroit on Thanksgiving. Here's Jordan Love on that play.
It's awesome. You know, it's a great feeling. Obviously, game on the line right there, 4th-down. Got to have a play and to be able to throw one up. And for him just to make that catch, you know, it's phenomenal. But it's awesome to be able to, you know, put the game away right there on a got to have a play is something that, you know, you know in the game there's going to be opportunities and there's going to be moments where you got to make big-time plays, and that was a big-time play.
So what did Love think about going for it on 4th-down?
I mean, we were staying aggressive. You know, we got a chance to go out there and ice the game, you know, not even give them a chance to get the ball back. And we stayed aggressive, and I love it. We made plays right there.
So why did the Packers decide to go for it on 4th-down? Here's Coach Matt LaFleur.
Well, I kind of made up my mind prior to that. I told Jordan, hey, we got 2 downs here. We got to get 1 of the 2. So I just can't say enough great things about Wicks. We've all seen the type of season that it's been for him in regards to battling through. He's been injured quite a bit. It's been in and out of the lineup, but he made critical plays all game.
Coach LaFleur had a lot more to say about Dontavian Wicks in his postgame press conference Thursday.
We've all seen the type of season that it's been for him in regards to battling through. He's been injured quite a bit. It's been in and out of the lineup, but he made critical plays all game. I mean, the touchdown on 4th-down, obviously the 4th-down conversion there at the end. Just really proud of him and just his mental toughness to stay with it, because he's a hell of a player. He's a tough guy to cover, and he came up big for us today.
Wicks' teammates know all about what he brings to the table. In fact, receiver Christian Watson says the Packers don't win Thursday without him.
It was huge. I mean, we don't win the game without him. So he made me right, you know, on that 3rd-down. Got to find a way to come down with it. But, he came out there in the next play and got it done. So, and he was a big part of this win today.
Here is Dontavian Wicks on what happened on that 4th-down-and-3, that final play to seal the deal for the Packers.
I just knew he was going to hold, which they always do. I knew he was going to hold. So I had to really, like, get vertical and break it off flat to get 10 a chance. You know, he threw it up and made the play.
Lions coach Dan Campbell says the 4th-down conversions for the Packers, all 3 of them, were the difference.
Really, this game came down to 4th-down and those critical moments, and we were 0-for-2, and they were able to capitalize on 3 of them. So, you know, and those are the 1 or 2 plays really that make the difference when you're playing a really good team. So, that's really kind of what it came down to.
What does this win and the win over the Vikings earlier this week mean for the Packers? Here's Coach Matt LaFleur.
No, I mean, every game's its own game, and we just came in here with an aggressive mindset and think that that's one of the ways that you have to play against these guys, knowing that you're going to have to defend four downs. So, you know, it's a really good football team. Like, they've won a lot of games. So I thought the only way that, you know, you come into this place, which is not an easy place to play, is you got to be aggressive.
So what's next for the Packers? Well, first up, they get some time off before they play the Chicago Bears on Sunday, December 7th. That game got flexed from noon until 3:25 in the afternoon. The Bears currently lead the NFC North. A week after that, it's the same exact time, a 3:25 Central Time kickoff. They are at Denver against the Broncos, against a pretty solid defense in that matchup. So the first two games in December for the Packers are on Sunday. Then after that, it is all TBD. In week 16, they're third to final game of the year. The Packers then have to go back and play the Bears in Chicago, and that game will be on a Saturday. That'll be at either 3:30 or 7 o'clock that day. I would take bets on that one being a later game, given the significance of what that matchup could be. Could very well be for a division title at that point. The penultimate game in week 17 is against the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens, by the way, just got beat Thursday night against the Cincinnati Bengals, a game in which they turned it over five times in that loss. Baltimore might be playing for its season by then. That game will be played either Saturday or Sunday near the end of December. And then the first weekend in January is the NFL's full flex week. That's where every single game is on a flex schedule, and the Packers will take on the Vikings. In that matchup, the Vikings appear to be all but done with contending in the NFC North, so that game could be an earlier start time on that Sunday, as the Packers, at that point, will have played five of their six divisional games. By the way, they're doing almost all of their divisional games, five of the six that they play in the final 7 weeks of the season. They still have two games left now against the Chicago Bears, their next one, and then they get the Broncos game, then they're at the Bears after that, Ravens, and then at the Vikings. So a couple of home games left and three divisional games to go yet for the Packers. There's a lot of football to be played yet this season. All right, rest of the show, we're going to talk more football, D3 football, in fact, that comes your way next right here on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Sports Network. Back in just a bit.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Thank you for joining us here on this snowy Saturday morning. I'm Jimmy Cuska, and in this segment, just a few hours out from the start of the Division III football playoffs for four Wisconsin teams still remaining from the WIAC. UW-River Falls and UW-Platteville and UW-Whitewater are all hosting games today. The Platteville and Whitewater games should be in the snow, and I would know because I'm here in Platteville, and I'm looking out the window, and the snow is coming down very, very much here this morning, and I'll be calling the Platteville-Alma game coming up at noon today. Also, there is another game in Michigan. La Crosse is playing at Hope. So there are four WIAC teams in action today, and all of them will be in the snow. I had a chance last week to talk to Pat Coleman of D3Football.com about the fact that the WIAC is the first team in D3, or the first conference in D3, to send all four of these teams to the postseason. They were also the first conference to ever have sent three, which happened back in 2016. Now they send for this year. So I asked about that and what it meant for these squads all getting in the same year.
Took kind of a perfect storm of great results in non-conference play and then the right results in conference play where nobody ended up with more than two losses. You know, maybe there was a chance for a three-loss team out of the WIAC to get in the playoffs, but it wasn't necessary. Somehow it all lined up to be about as good as it could possibly be. Basically, yeah, I mean, basically a perfect storm, like I said, for the WIAC. And then Concordia, Wisconsin, you know, maybe not the preseason favorite in the NAC, in the Northern Athletics Collegiate Conference, knocking off Aurora and some of the other favorites and getting into the playoffs as well. So, yeah, should be a lot of fun for D3 in Wisconsin, as frankly it always is.
The four WIAC teams all got a bye, so I asked Pat about whether or not that would be in their favor as they get ready for their round two matchups.
You know, you think about, you know, guys who have played, you don't play 11 weeks in a row, obviously, in Division III, right? You play 10 games over the course of 11 weeks. But if you're in the WIAC, your bye week was week four. That was, you know, like the second to last weekend of September. These guys have been playing for a little bit. So to have a break, I think, you know, there hadn't been byes in the Division III playoffs since 2004 when they came back last year. I think there'll still be some adjustments for schools as to how they decide they want to structure their off week practices and that sort of thing. You know, how much time do you give kids off? It's after Thanksgiving when these guys then finally take the field again. And so there'll be some learning curve, I think, for teams. But, you know, for folks like La Crosse and Platteville and Whitewater, they're playing a team on the other side that's done the exact same thing. So, you know, at least it'll be fairly even. You know, La Crosse going to Hope, that's one of the interesting matchups because I don't think we know very well who's going to play quarterback for La Crosse. And Hope has been a pretty decent program over the past couple of years. They did win a game in last year's playoff. They were not embarrassed at North Central when they played them in a later round. That'll be interesting. Platteville gets to play at home. I'm sure Platteville is smarting for not having won that game at Wartburg last year. Alma is certainly someone who they should have film on already because Alma played River Falls earlier in the season. So they should get some good look at that. And then, you know, that Whitewater DePauw game is interesting too. DePauw is very strong defensively. They have a couple of really good weapons on offense, and that should be a really good matchup for Whitewater. I think that we don't pick round two until round two happens. I suspect it'll be a pretty toss-up game, that one.
Pat Coleman is the person behind D3Football.com, and he told me all about the coverage they are offering in the games today and beyond.
This is the most wonderful time of the year, right? We've got 39 games between now and January 4th to decide who the Division III football national champion will be. And so across the course of this past week, and you could find these things on the D3Football.com front page right now, is we have been previewing each team by team. So there's 40 team capsules. You want to know not just about the five Wisconsin schools, but some stuff about all of the teams that they're playing or teams that might be elsewhere in their bracket. We have all of that for you. And then our kind of group of experts has gone through and predicted the bracket kind of at large, like who are going to be the surprises and the disappointments in each of the four quadrants and who we think will survive to the semifinals. That dropped on Thursday. It's in a column called Around the Nation. And then Friday morning, we released our game predictions, and that's score by score from eight different people. So one of the benefits of this is that you get an idea, like, do we think it's going to be a high scoring game or a low scoring game? Will it be close or will it be, you know, a game that's kind of a blowout? Those are what you get by having eight different opinions. And, you know, even if you're a Wyack fan who doesn't have a rooting interest in most of those games, I would definitely suggest sitting down, pull up that ESPN Plus app on your smart TV or on your laptop or on your phone and consume as much of this playoff as possible.
So that again was Pat Coleman of D3Football.com, who joined us last week to talk about the Division III football playoffs. One of the teams in action today is UW River Falls, and they will be taking on Chapman. That game kicks off at noon at Raymer Field. I had Coach Matt Walker on a few weeks ago to talk about sort of the history of River Falls football and where it's evolved from this wishbone school in West Central Wisconsin to now this team, this program that is very well known for an offense that is absolutely prolific, with Caleb Blaha leading the NCAA in offense and River Falls getting up and down the field. Coach Matt Walker joined me to talk a bit about the history of River Falls Falcons football as the WIAC champs get ready again for a game today at noon against Chapman.
Well, I think you mentioned the Wishbone Camp, and it touches on the history of the program. It's one of the things I truly appreciate a lot about this place. There's a rich, long tradition here, as a lot of the teams do in our league. I explain to people all the time that everyone's kind of had their run in this best league in the country. Everyone's had their little moments. The league's been a cycle forever, this nonstop cycle. And, you know, we just put an 80s group in the Hall of Fame, the 84 to 87 guys that won four in a row, the 75 team that was Coach Farley's first one conference title. They were here for the game against Whitewater last week. And so anyway, you touch on some history there. And so when I was thinking about the job, I just knew, you know, it's been done there before. It's an incredible location, best league in America. They're talking about these plans for this new facility that I now currently sit in that wasn't there at the time. And I just thought it was one of these things where we could get it going. It obviously took longer than anybody wanted to. Nobody's more frustrated than me at how long it took. But I had a clear vision, and I knew that we could do it. The ability to recruit both states and kind of treat Minnesota as an in-state, you know, a portion of our recruiting map was a big deal to me. I thought that could be an advantage. So we just stuck with our plan. I wish I had the answer of why it didn't go better before COVID. I would have done it a long time ago and before that, but we just kept hitting our head against the wall. We couldn't get over the hump. We had some good teams. You know, we started off, we had 42 kids on the team the day I took the job. no talent. We had culture issues. We had recruiting relationship issues. The rebuild became a restart, and it was even messier than I thought when I got here. We barely won a game in the decade of the 2000s, and we just had to go to work knowing we were going to get our butts kicked the first few years, and boy, did we. We just did. And then some momentum, you know, we got a little recruiting going. People learned who we were. And then the building broke ground. And I think that was some momentum that we needed, you know, kind of midway through the rebuild. And then we got to 19 before COVID. I thought we had a really good team. And we still laid a three win egg out there and didn't turn it. And I'm like, damn, I don't know what the heck to do. But COVID, I told people it was kind of a good time for me. I maybe needed it to take a breath. And I'm going to make a point here. Going back to the wishbone thing, when River Falls was rolling back then, they just had unique identity. And I don't know if, you know, the wishbone's not the answer for me. It's not who I am. But it was very clear. You're a kid that grew up from Wisconsin. Everybody identified River Falls football with something, and it was wishbone, smash mouth, nasty football. And so that COVID thing, it was a time where I'm like, you know what? I want to be brave. And we talked about dabbling in this tempo offense. And I'm like, boy, look, we need to be unique. We need to be different. And so that was kind of a big moment for us. And we decided, I don't want to dabble anymore. We want to snap the football faster than anybody in the world that plays American football. And we've done that. We've become that. We got great identity. It's attracted players. It was a program decision, though. You know, Jake Wissing was my offensive coordinator my entire career, and I moved him to defense over COVID. I said, buddy, I need you to go over there. You're the most trusted guy I have in the game of football, most trusted friend I have in this profession. I need you to make this move. And God dang, he found his calling. And now we have, you know, a pretty amazing defense, and clearly you've got this national brand offensively. And now we've just started to attract some recruits, and you know, we had the success the year after COVID. We went, you know, you win 9 games, and it just jump started the whole thing.
Coach Walker explained that the COVID year was really the big turning point for taking the River Falls Falcons program from the bottom half of the conference standings all the way to being conference champions this year for the first time in decades.
I thought in 19 we had a good team, and then, you know, it was interesting that COVID time became a moment where you had to go make sure all your big good players were going to come back and take their option COVID year, when every single one of our big time players said, I'm coming back, I'm taking the option year. I knew we had a chance to be something special. And then, you know, Cole Hendrickson, not a lot of people remember that name, but he was the quarterback on that Isthmus Bowl team. I give Cole a ton of credit. He kind of became the leader of that group. He never started until that year. He backed up Ben Beckman, who was that quarterback in 18-19. And I knew there was something special with Cole, and he could really do something unique at this level when he got his opportunity. And so when they all said, I'm coming back, and Cole said, I'm coming back, I could feel that we were going to have a special year. We just did. You know, it's like that win at Oshkosh. Again, no one remember this but us, but that win at Oshkosh in 21 to seal the deal that we were going to the bowl game. I'll never forget his fourth down. We put that Ben Beise kid, that tight end, he got drafted by the Buccaneers or went with in Tampa Bay there in the preseason thing. He was an NFL kid. He's an amazing player. We put him in a wildcat and short yardage, and we did about 5 times that game and picked it up every time. And on the big 4th-and-3 to seal it, we decided to do the fake off, and we tap it away. He catches it and taps it away from him to the sweep kid. And when that kid ran for the 4th yard of the 4th-and-3, it's like this emotion that I can't explain came over me. And I said, we've done it. We've been knocking at this door for so long, and we just kicked it in. We're going to play postseason football for the first time in a really long time. And that was really the moment where I said, this can be a monster now. And I knew Caleb was the backup at that time. He didn't even start when he got here. And you knew he was going to be special. I knew he was unique, but he wasn't ready yet. And I said, we've done it. This can turn into a monster. And we've just kind of stayed the course here.
So how about this season? What was the turning point in 2025? Coach Walker talked about the win over UW-Whitewater, the first win over the Warhawks in decades for the Falcons, as being a significant moment this season that not only helped them take the monkey off their back of beating Whitewater, but also helping the Falcons win their first conference title in decades, the Whitewater game being a big turning point for the program this season. Coach Walker.
Even that week leading up to the Whitewater game, I pulled on some of the history heartstrings more than ever with you know, all these close losses to Whitewater and how that's one of the humps we haven't gotten over yet since we've been here, of all these accomplishments and national rankings and the Whitewater hump we hadn't broke through yet. So to get that win right after, again, an emotion that's hard to put into words. But I said, you know, we're gonna talk about it on Monday for 5 minutes, what it means, and then we got to get back to the process. And we did, you know, it's like you can not say anything anymore, but you can try to create your own narratives. One of the things I've changed is these kids know more than I do. They're looking at websites and watching stuff like you and Logan Hansing and D3 Folk. They know more stuff than I do about the math and NPI. And so I don't hide behind the truth anymore. So we say it's the 5 minute cloud talk, these goals that live in the clouds for us. We talk about it for 5 minutes on Monday. And I'm like, listen, beyond the playoff stuff and the conference title opportunities and stuff, like, we haven't won an outright championship since 1985 here. We haven't shared a title since 80 or 98. We haven't been to the playoffs since 96. I'm like, that's important for you guys to know as being these members of this family that I consider, you know, bigger than just yourself because of the history.
That again, Coach Matt Walker, who joined me a couple of weeks ago. The four conference teams in action from the WIAC today. Whitewater hosts DePauw at noon. River Falls hosts Chapman at noon, as we had talked about. La Crosse is at Hope. That is an 11 a.m. Central Time kickoff. And I will be on the call for Platteville versus Alma coming up at noon today on ESPN+. We'll wrap up the show talking about the Milwaukee Bucks coming up next here on Make the Call on Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Welcome back to Make the Call here on the Civic Media Sports Network. I'm Jimmy Cuska, and in this segment, we like to talk to our friends across sports across Wisconsin. And I am joined by Jordan Tresky, who is the author of Building the Milwaukee Bucks, and he's also a podcaster covering the Milwaukee Bucks. Jordan, it's great to talk to you again. I've had you on other Civic Media programs, but it's great to welcome you in formally to our new sports show.
Awesome. I'm happy to be here, and thanks for having me again.
You know, we talked about your book last year as you were getting it finalized and getting it to print. It has gone out. It is up for sale. People can find it. It's in all the usual spots if you want to find Building the Milwaukee Bucks, and I've had a chance to read it. I want to start with this. Just a little background of the book. This was kind of a labor of love situation, a research notes turned into a story situation. Can you tell us a little bit about that origin story and about writing this book?
It was very much inspired by the 21 championship run and being, you know, totally in the present. And I've always been fascinated by Bucks history, wanting to see, like, you know, 50 years. It had been 50 years. So how did this title run, or the most recent one, differ to when they won in 1971? Obviously, the circumstances are different. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the superstar instead of Giannis Antetokounmpo. But it's the Bucks really coming into their own, you know, 3 years after coming into the NBA. And it was just kind of trying to tell a story about Milwaukee sports and how the Bucks kind of played this integral way into kind of revitalizing the sports scene in Milwaukee.
What parallels can you draw between the Bucks of that era and the current era Milwaukee Bucks? Even now, as we've seen now the last few years after the championship, what are some similarities between these two?
Oh, I think my answer has certainly changed over time, but I think you kind of realize, like, when you're in the moment, you just see how, like, it gets really hard to sustain it. You get a lot older. You know, you lose some things that, like, you know, the Bucks were, a lot of things are different, like comparing it to like an expansion franchise to a team that was, you know, at the bottom of the barrel of the NBA when Giannis came to town. But the core tenets are still the same. It's really hard to sustain a successful team, even when you have one of the best superstars in the league. So I think that's where, like, we can kind of see the life cycle for what it is, and hopefully we'll change this year with this coming Bucks season. But when the Bucks were trying to do with Kareem, it was like they got Oscar, they got a little older, they didn't have high draft picks, and, you know, some personnel management decisions didn't go their way, but, like, they still had a lot of things break the right way leading up to winning the championship.
Talking to Jordan Tresky, who's author of Building the Milwaukee Bucks, let's talk just about the feedback for your book, because I have to imagine, not just for people who are fans of the Bucks, but for people who like just a look at the history of whether it's the Bucks, the city of Milwaukee, or basketball, or just history in general, it's got to be a pretty cool treat for them. What's the feedback been like for you?
It's been pretty wild. I've gotten to do some fun events like Boswell Book Company, which is downtown Milwaukee. I have upcoming appearances at the Southeastern Wisconsin Festival of Books. That'll be November 8th. I got another book appearance at Lion's Tooth in Bayview. So it's like kind of in that promotion cycle, but it's Eddie Doucette read the book, which is kind of crazy. He was the original Bucks announcer. So like the guy that kind of, I mean, he invented the term bango. For not three point shots at the time, but long range jumpers, let's just say. So seeing that is kind of wild. and it was kind of a trip, but like just hearing like kind of the tentacles of like how far it's gone into, like, you know, you kind of breaking through, like, will maybe the team acknowledge it? I don't know if the current team has acknowledged it, but you know, the people that were of that time and made kind of a, you know, their imprint on the Bucks have certainly acknowledged it, which is more than I could have anticipated, certainly.
You can find Building the Milwaukee Bucks pretty much anywhere you get books, right? You can find it online. You can find it in bookstores, especially, as you mentioned, in Southeastern Wisconsin. And if you want to find out even more information on it, Jordan, you have got a pretty good social media presence, so people are able to find it there as well, at Jordan Tresky on Twitter, if you're so inclined. I do want to talk a little bit about the current Bucks. I think this year, the vibes are a little different in Milwaukee this year, just because they've gone, you know, again, with a roster overhaul. I don't want to call it desperation or anything, but like it just seems like they have gone all in on doing everything they can do to please Giannis and keep him in a Bucks uniform, all the way to the point of having two of his brothers sign contracts this year. What is your take just on the Bucks going into this year? Is it just seem like the vibes are different to you?
It's definitely different. I think there is some, I don't think this desperation is too far off of a word, but at the same time, this is a team that, if we're being honest, even with context of injuries that, you know, coming at the worst time during the playoffs, like, this team has underachieved for 3 years. Like, you know, going back to the Heat series where they lost in the first round and became the first number one, or were they? No, not the first number one seed, but still, like, they had the best record in the NBA. They lost in tremendous fashion, and they really haven't been able to kind of reel it back in. I think this time around, though, there's at least some kind of, you know, obviously motivation, but there's some semblance of like an idea of what they're trying to build. Like, we kind of saw it late last year when, you know, not coincidentally, Damian Lillard went out and they went all in on kind of this point Giannis, spacing the shooters, playing super fast, like kind of, you know, modern NBA. The things that they were doing when Mike Budenholzer came to town, you know, 7 years ago, which is just crazy that it's been that long. But I think they're just kind of like, this is our whole identity now. And, you know, we already seen the injury to Kevin Porter Jr. that may be a while, but still, like, I think when they had nothing left to lose, they're just kind of like, all right, this is who we are. And we'll see where it can take us in a very kind of weakened Eastern Conference, admittedly.
Jordan Tresky, the author of Building the Milwaukee Bucks, which you can find in bookstores and online. Also, you can find him, again, on social media at Jordan Tresky. You can find his podcast work there. Jordan, great to talk to you about the Bucks and about your book. Congratulations on that, and I look forward to talking to you again here real soon.
Awesome. Thanks again for having me.
That again, Jordan Tresky, author of Building the Milwaukee Bucks. A big thanks to all the people who are part of today's show. That, of course, that includes Jake Kukurowski of Badger Observer previewing today's Minnesota matchup. Also, Mike Clemens providing all the Packers audio. Matt Walker, UW River Falls. Pat Coleman, D3Football.com. We'll be back with the usual roundtable approach next week. We'll welcome back Conrad, Gray, and Parker. But I'm Jimmy Kuska. You've been listening to a special Thanksgiving week edition of Make the Call on the Civic Media Sports Network. Have a great weekend, everybody.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.